we've been living this way and it feels like it's been like this forever, but it really, really hasn't. It's kind of like this myth that the way that we live today is the way it's always been.
Before I opened my first treatment center, I had a quick little mental breakdown in the car on my way home from work one day. I called two of my coworkers and I remember saying to them, I'm a human being, not a machine. I had just been asked for the unknown time to do the work of someone else simply because their license at the time was more valuable than my title was. Don't worry, hierarchical bullshit. I was excellent at my job, but that doesn't mean I should be overworked. Productivity. That's what today's podcast is about. Productivity, but not just any type of productivity, toxic productivity. My guest is Dr. Therese Mascardo. She's a Filipina-American licensed clinical psychologist and CEO and founder of Exploring Therapy, a wellness community with the mission to help all people live a more healthy, free, and connected life that they absolutely love. Get ready to learn how efficiency is great until it removes our humanity. I'll repeat that. Efficiency is great until it removes our humanity. Let's go, humans. Enjoy. Dr. Therese Mascardo, thank you so much for coming on to the Human First podcast. Our listeners just heard about all the wonderful things that you've done in your career. What can you tell us about you as a human?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. Well, I'm from Orange County. I think you may have grown up or spent some time in that area too. Yeah. I split my time between LA and Lisbon, which just makes me the happiest version of myself. I'm a huge foodie. I love to cook. My happiest is when I am cooking for a group of friends, having a dinner party, and there's way too much food on the table.
I love that so much. You know, I've actually been to, yes, born and raised in Orange County. Here now currently, but I've also been to Lisbon, one of the few places I've been internationally ever. And one of my, well, I'd say one of my favorite places, not many to choose from, but beautiful. So I love that you split your time there.
I'm so like, I love that you've been there because not a lot of Americans have made it over yet. I think it's like more popular now, but this Portugal is an amazing country and like the European lifestyle. I mean, I think speaking of our topic today, they get it. They really know how to live over here. So that's why I really made it a priority to spend more time here.
I love that. Yeah, I like that too. I was just talking about that recently, just like, it's just so 9 to 5 here in America. Oh, I'm sure we're going to talk all about that.
Yeah, let's do it.
So why, you know, the topic of discussion today is toxic productivity. Why productivity at all? Why try to help this area of human existence?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, it's something that I've been personally impacted with. I've suffered from burnout. You know, I've had the jobs where I didn't sleep, where my health really, really suffered. So it's something that I've experienced and suffered from on a very personal basis. My personal mission is to help people build a life they don't need a vacation from. And I really see that as helping people connect with ways to delight in their lives. And that is also a very personal mission for me because I lost someone over 10 years ago. I lost my brother to suicide. And just knowing that he struggled with depression and really struggled to connect with the notion that life is a gift really impacted me. So that's why I feel like I want everything I do to help people connect with that their life is worth living.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
That's a fear I have constantly. So thank you.
Yeah. I know you talk about it a lot. And it's for those of us who work in mental health, you know, we're not immune from having, you know, from dealing with these things personally and from having our loved ones suffer from it. And so obviously it was a very difficult thing to experience, but I'm grateful that it allows me to, I think, serve people better because I get the pain and I get the grief too. And I'm sure you can relate as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's such a powerful why. I'm a little, anything that is just heartfelt stops my heart a little bit in a good way.
It's
a beautiful why. Yeah, no, thank you. Truly. Turning pain into understanding and purpose is so powerful.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about today, it's like whenever we go emotional, I'm like, oh, I just want to talk about all of that, but we got to, we'll provide the help. We'll provide the help. Yeah. So this episode, we're talking about the truth about toxic productivity. So, but let's define that. What is toxicity? What is productivity?
Yeah, great questions. So toxicity, I define as anything that causes harm. And productivity is technically, it's the rate at which we produce, but it's really work, right? So it's having a harmful relationship with work. And the way that I think is easiest to understand toxic productivity is it's prioritizing productivity over people.
That almost just seems like the American model.
It is. No, it 100% is. And it's crazy because we've been living this way and it feels like it's been like this forever, but it really, really hasn't. It's kind of like this myth that the way that we live today is the way it's always been.
That is a perfect segue because you're right. It wasn't always this way. How did we get here? Why do we have to have a conversation about toxic productivity? You know, how did it start?
Yeah. How did we get into this crappy place? Yeah. So the story is actually kind of interesting and it starts with the Industrial Revolution. So the light bulb became popularized in use in the 1880s. And around this time is when we could now not just work during daylight hours. And, you know, we were very agricultural back at this time and we were making the switch to more of that, you know, machinery and all of the automating of things. So the light bulb was a game changer. People could now work all the time and it had a huge positive impact on society. However, it also meant that people could overwork and people used to work way more than 40 hours at this time. And it wasn't until Henry Ford came around. And so this is like around the 1920s, 1930s. Henry Ford was one of the pioneers of the 40-hour work week. And this was supposed to really help us so that people weren't working 60 or 80 hours a week. It was saying, hey, let's put a limit on how much we work. So originally the 40-hour work week was designed to be something helpful for us and better than what we had. But now it's become kind of this thing that we're tethered to where we think that it's the only way to work well and to work productively, but it's not actually the case.
That's so interesting because it seems like, you know, taking all of those factors into consideration of like the times and like what was really needed in our country was like, it was the Industrial Revolution. We needed like that 9-to-5 factories to create and manufacture everything that was going on. With the invention of the internet and technology, it seems like we're now realizing that what we needed in the past, maybe to like accept where we were at in society and innovation, is like now we're there and we can justify caring more about how our mind and body work and what we need for wellness versus necessarily what we need to like grow our economy. Does that make sense?
For sure. It does. So yeah, back in the day, all of this work that we were doing really helped our culture grow and there were benefits, right? So people were putting more food on the table. We weren't just surviving. We were now leaning more into thriving, but things have changed. And so I think we're at this crossroads where people are really asking, well, why do I have to drive into the office? Why do I have to work this many hours? And they're really, really good questions. And I'm kind of, frankly, I'm really just so amazed by what's happening right now with the great resignation, where people are saying, hey, work is really not healthy for me. And I'm not going to do this anymore because I think we put up with it for a long time. And what happened with the pandemic really gave us an opportunity to pause. And for many of us who have the privilege to, we could walk away from the way things were. But there's also a ton of people who haven't had that privilege and that opportunity.
Yes. And that's so important to acknowledge too. Okay, here we go. We're going to get into it. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's go.
This is going to be so helpful for people. So you say that toxic productivity is prioritizing productivity over people. Are there actual components of toxic productivity? And if so, what are they?
Yes, I think there's a lot of components, but I think there are kind of three main ones when we're looking at how to define what is toxic productivity. So the first is that it impacts your relationships, and that can also be your relationship with yourself. So your health is impacted. People might be complaining that you're never around. You don't feel present. So either the people in your life are complaining or you are feeling the impacts physically and mentally from your relationship with work. Okay. So relationships with yourself and with others is the first thing. The second is that you have unrealistic expectations. So we saw a lot of this when I first wrote about toxic productivity in April 2020. Believe it or not, there was almost nothing written about it at the time. And it just seemed like it was such a slap in the face moment, or slap you over upside the head moment, because people, especially, I want to say moms, women, were suffering so badly because the expectation was somehow they should be able to be teachers, watch their kids at home, and completely do their jobs exactly the same way. And I mean, this was a huge, like a societal betrayal that we expected women to just be able to do it all. And I have so many clients in my practice who were suffering, trying to hold all these spinning plates in the air. And so I think expectations really set the tone for your experience with work. Because if you expect that you should be able to do it all, you're going to try and you're going to kill yourself over it. But if the expectation is more realistic and more kind, then, you know, your overall experience with work changes too. So having realistic, or in this case, unrealistic expectations. And then the third aspect of toxic productivity is difficulty with stillness or rest. And I'm laughing because I feel like you and I totally get that from our own personal experience.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So relationships,
expectations
and rest, or the inability to rest.
Yes.
Okay. I might be the poster child for toxic productivity. You know what? I'm improving on it. I think when it comes to relationships, like I'm definitely placing, well, see, that's what gets fucking confusing is that my productivity is helping people. So I think it's the shift of like, direct people, right? Like family and the people that they're giving it to you, so you give it back kind of thing. So I think I've improved on the relationships, but not on the other two. I know we were even just talking before filming and I'm like, for everyone who's going to see this video, I'm like jankily holding my microphone. That's usually like on a stand. I'm in my bedroom. Like my headphones stopped working in the middle of this. And I'm so sick and I'm still working. And so I will absolutely be taking this advice.
It's so hard because the thing is that, like, I don't really think toxic productivity at its core is an individual problem so much as it is like a societal cultural problem. And that's the honest truth. And I think there are things we can do on an individual level, but it's just really tough. You're basically swimming upstream when you're trying to do things like take care of yourself and rest and take the sick days, because the truth is, we completely glorify busyness and we admire people. I remember when I was in college, you know, someone would be like, oh, I pulled an all-nighter. And we would be like, wow, you work so hard. You stayed up all night, as if there's some sort of God, you know? And so I think it's just so embedded into what our society is. You're actually reminding me of the story I heard once about Mother Teresa. It actually helped me when I was like such a like overworker. And it was a story where she kept feeding people her own meal. And so she became very weak and faint because, you know, she was in India serving the poor and the hungry. And so she kept giving up her own meal. And so she at one point fainted and someone went up to her and said, like, you need to eat so that you can continue to do what you do and feed others. And I think the same is true for what you're saying, because you're right, your work does help people. But if you're sick and if you're suffering and if, you know, your family's pissed off at you because you're not home, then like that doesn't really help you to continue to keep giving.
Oh, yes. Thank you for the therapy. I needed to hear that, actually. I won't forget that story. It's really, really important. And yeah, you're right. It is infused in the culture and in society. And sometimes that doesn't actually mean that the people within the culture and society understand that they're being toxic or understand that they're like fueling these messages. Like the treatment center that I worked at before I owned my own, the owners were incredible human beings that really wanted to help people. And I don't think I described them that way in my very first podcast interview. I apologize if you're listening to this now. I take it back. And but they said, and it's because I was still dealing with this kind of this toxic productivity culture, because when I worked there, I always got praised for being a machine. It was always Courtney's a machine. Courtney can do it all. Courtney can wear all the hats. And you know, now I'm realizing more and more that I did a little bit of that to myself because they may have brought the culture, but I agreed with the culture. I thrived in the culture. And so I think it'll be great as we're talking to sort of like, how do we combat this and what do we do about it? So
you were rewarded. Like you were rewarded for the unhealth, and that's part of the problem. So that's, I think, fuels into what the solutions can look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So culture and society play a role in this fundamental error that we are making when it comes to living our lives in a healthy way. How exactly do culture and society play a role?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. We reward overwork and we glorify it and we act like those people are amazing. And one of the things that's become, I'm trying to think of an analogy for it. It's something that gives people like an instant high is what I'm thinking of is hustle culture. Hustle culture is like, yeah, I just need to like work way harder and I need to beat myself up and do all these things. And then I'll be a billionaire or a millionaire or whatever. And I'm not going to name any names, but you know, the folks that really tout hustle culture are, you know, they're writing books and people just eat it up. It's like that candy, that instant high that they think here's the easy solution to my problems. So I think that we see overwork as like this answer to how we're going to have the happy life that we dream of. And we fail to recognize that actually it could cost you quite a bit as well. So I think it's the books that everyone's buying. It's those bestsellers out there that say, hey, here's the answer. You got to hustle. I think it starts from an early age. Like, I don't know if you remember like experiencing this in school, but I remember we used to get rewarded for perfect attendance. So what does that say? It says, oh, you're doing a good job if you come to school every day, but heaven forbid if you take a sick day.
Yeah, exactly. And I like made a face when you started talking about perfect attendance, because as a therapist, it's like, what do you mean? What about people who are neurodivergent, or as a social worker, people who they can't literally get a ride to school, even as an example, because their parents had to pick up another job or something like that. It's just, yeah, this idea that you should show up no matter what and do the best you can no matter what. And we need to, things need to matter. There needs to be reasons why we can't show up perfectly and with productivity all the time.
Amen. I love how you said it. Things need to matter, right? And for too long, we have rewarded only one thing. And I think that needs to change. I think part of the solution is we need to start now rewarding the things that really do matter.
We really do need to do that. Are there generational differences or gender differences when it comes to productivity? And can you talk a little bit about that for our listeners?
100%. So generational differences, when you think of baby boomers, this was really like the beginning of that culture of just work hard and your dreams will happen. Right. And I think it's so funny now because I love seeing these generational comparisons where they talk about how much easier it was for baby boomers to buy a house than it was for like millennials and younger, because it was a different world, right? It was easier for them. And if they did work a little hard, then they got rewarded and it's not the same anymore. So I'm actually really impressed with Gen Zers because I think they get it. I think they're now seeing the sins of the father, so to speak. And they're like, I don't want what my grandparents or my parents had. No, like they work their butt off and yeah, they might have money, but they're not happy. And right. I love that the younger generation is prioritizing their wholeness and their happiness and their well-being. And truly it is a privilege because you have to grow up in a relatively safe society in order to do that. Baby boomers were obviously born during wartime, so they didn't have that opportunity in the same way. But yeah, 100% generational. And then what was the other thing that you asked? Was it cultural?
Gender differences.
Gender. Yeah, I mean, we kind of alluded to this before, but where did this expectation come from that women are supposed to do everything, right? The 40-hour work week, actually, it's interesting because this occurred at a time when often the husband in the family was the breadwinner, and then the wife was a homemaker who got to stay home. And that was a bit more of the cultural standard. And even though the cultural standard has changed, our expectations of women being perfect at it all haven't. And so what's the result? Women are losing it. Like there's just no way that we can hold it together because we're set up to fail. There's no way to succeed. And yet the system kind of expects that it should be normal, that we can somehow work all these hours, be a badass at our job, be an amazing leader, a boss, whatever, and then also be a great mom and be present. I mean, just how does that work? I don't know. You tell me. I'm not a mom, but how is that supposed to happen?
Yeah. And that's a great question, because as somebody who is doing all the things and is a mom, the only way that my son is truly getting the care that he needs is because he has a stay-at-home dad who doesn't do it all. It's like the roles are switched. Like I really don't know how anybody can expect one person to do to do it all. And that happens in so many different areas. It can happen in relationships, can happen in marriages and families. It can happen in schools, in employment settings, in government, in policy. It's just like, we literally, our policies reflect to some degree our culture and society's perspective, or, you know, somebody's perspective who's getting the go of like, what policies are we going to put forward, that we should be able to do it all. That's literally what the policies state, most of them in our country today.
Yeah, it's so screwed up. And also, I think we should probably acknowledge just the sheer patriarchal blindness, right? Because we have, speaking of like having a stay-at-home dad for your son, which is amazing, we as a society grossly undervalue the what work is done at home to take care of a family. You know, homemaking is completely disrespected, even though it's essentially unpaid labor and some of the hardest labor that there is out there. Let's be real, right? So, I mean, that these things obviously impact gender quite a bit and how toxic productivity expectations show up for us.
Yes. So the components of toxic productivity, if you're listening, then listen to this next part, because this is going to be how you can help yourself. So if you are, if you feel like you may be toxically productive, your relationships are being affected, your expectations are increasing. What was the last one? Self-care. Of course, the one I forgot.
Rest, relationships rest. And expectations. Yeah.
Rest, relationship and expectations. If you feel like you need to know what to do in those areas because your relationships are being affected, you don't find yourself able to rest, and your expectations, either yours or somebody else's on you, are just out of control, then here's what you can do about it. So what are some individual ways that we can combat toxic productivity? Because you say that it's more cultural and societal, right? So we know what we can do there, changing those systems. But as an individual within those systems, what do we do?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is like, don't beat yourself up. It's not your fault that you're this way. As we've talked about, there's just every force in the world is kind of leading you to have this toxic relationship with work. And so a lot of it starts with reframing. I think first we need to reframe rest. As a culture, we don't value rest. We act like it's completely unimportant. We act like it's completely supplemental. And instead, we need to start seeing that rest is absolutely a necessary part of being productive. I don't think we see it that way yet, right? Rest is like, oh, this thing out there that like lazy people do, right?
Right.
And I think we need to see rest as heroic. I think that we need to reward rest in ourselves and other people. And I think that we're seeing a little bit more of this in the mental health community, especially in social media, where we're like, yeah, you take that day off, you take that sick day. So I'm seeing it start to happen, but we really do need to just check ourselves and say, okay, what's my relationship with rest? Is this something I'm actually valuing and prioritizing? Or have I treated it like it's not that important, it's not necessary, and I'll squeeze it in when I can. Right. And even the way you put it in your schedule will say how much of a priority it is, because sometimes we just squeeze it in 5 minutes in between. Right. I also think we need to set realistic goals. And again, this is something that is privilege based, because some of us can't talk to our bosses and ask for, you know, remote hours, being able to work from home. Some of us don't feel comfortable to take the sick days. So trying to set as realistic expectations with yourself as possible, I think, is great. For example, because of the past 2 years that we've had with everything going on with the pandemic, hey, how about don't expect yourself to produce at the same level that you did before, right?
Right.
Do you remember at the beginning of the pandemic when everybody was like, oh, I have all this time in lockdown. I need to like pick up a new skill. I was so mind blown by that. I was like, this is ridiculous. We should be expecting less from ourselves, not more. And I think people really felt that pressure. So realistic goals, super important. By the way, speaking of mindfulness, I think that's another really healthy tip and something that's really easy to pick up because there's so many easy apps right now to practice mindfulness. So I think being able to just practice rest and presence with ourselves is one of the hardest acts in this day and age. And so being able to practice mindfulness for even like 5 minutes a day. I mean, I think it's pretty awesome that you can try to meditate for 5 minutes a day and it can make a difference, but studies show that it can. So mm-hmm. I think that's really big as well. And then one of the last things I'll say, I mean, I think there's a lot that you can do, but I think your self-talk is so, so important. And if there's one thing that I'm tired of seeing, and I really hope changes, it's that we equate our self-worth with productivity. And I did this. I used to feel so terrible. Sometimes I still do feel terrible when I didn't get my to-do list done the way that I expected, or when it was slow, things happened slower than I expected. And I think we need to start divesting our identity from how productive that we are and really investing in the wholeness of who we are, our hobbies, the things we enjoy. I think that's going to be a big piece as well.
Those are such helpful tips. And I think all of the tips my therapist has given me recently that I haven't listened to.
That's actually the other thing though, is accountability, right? Like, cause it's really hard. And so having other people to kind of check us helps a bunch too. Really glad you have your therapist to look out for you.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Let's say somebody who, doesn't have the privilege to do some of the mm-hmm. things, like maybe they're working multiple jobs and that's such another system issue. Right. They don't have the ability to really produce less in terms of how much mm-hmm. they're working and how unavailable they are. One, mm-hmm. my question is like, how could their mental health or physical health be getting affected? Mm-hmm. And what is something, just something out of all the things that you just suggested, since we can't really do some of them, like can't really mm-hmm. prioritize rest or redefine it, or maybe not right. engage in mindfulness. There might be 5 minutes, but it might just be stressful in those breaks. Mm-hmm. So what could be happening to somebody who is engaging in toxic productivity, and what's one mm-hmm. thing they can do if they can't shift their external environment?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And unfortunately, there's not one easy answer. One of the things I speak about with my clients a lot is controlling the controllables. So what are the things that you can do? Can they get a few more hours of sleep? Can they shift how they spend their time? So maybe scrolling less on social media, which I'm totally guilty of, and mm-hmm. investing in something that's more life-giving for them. And actually, I think that's something that we as a society could really do a lot better with, which is spending time on things that bring us joy and are life-giving. And I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and we were talking about how we treat joy like it's supposed to be a byproduct of doing all the things. Like if I do all the things, I should be joyful. But actually we need to treat joy like it's our goal and build toward that with intention. So even if it's just like 5 minutes of reading a book that you really love and saying, hey, me having fun and me enjoying myself is important, I think that could be a shift that's possible perhaps in whatever available time individuals like this have. But the truth is it's hard. And that's why I think as a society, we need to fight against the things that have built the system for us. And I think social media, something that you and I are both very involved in, can really help with that because it's changing norms and people are having the tough conversations and people aren't putting up with it in the same way, right? Like, again, back to the Great Resignation, it's people saying, hell no, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yes, yes, yes. And I was thinking about like some other things, like what would I suggest if I had a client that was in the situation and was like trying to pull themselves out of it?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, are you commuting to work? Like maybe it's listening to a podcast or listening mm-hmm. to, I don't know, mindful music or something. Like, well, if you can't change the structure of your life, like let's say you can't get more sleep, can't quit yes. your job, can't, what can you do in the moments where you just aren't working, any moment where you're not working, driving your car, doing your dishes, like,
yeah.
Can you implement mindfulness or self-care or rest, you know, and sometimes rest looks like just taking twice as long to do your dishes instead of doing them quickly, because that's actually providing your body and your mind a slower pace and an ability to just not use as much energy potentially.
Absolutely. Like anything where you can get your amygdala to disengage for a minute, singing, right? Anything that relaxes the vagus nerve, whatever you can do is so impactful. And actually you gave me a little light bulb moment because you reminded me of something that I learned from Dr. Shauna Shapiro, who's a big expert on mindfulness. And she talks about the concept of not making your pain more painful. And so she tells, I'll tell you a quick analogy for how she describes this. So living in Southern California, we all know traffic, right? It's like a way of life when you live in LA or Orange County. And so she tells the story of two scenarios. In the first scenario, a driver's trying to get from point A to point B, and then there's traffic. There's an accident on the freeway and they're going to be an hour late. So person A is like, oh, this is horrible. They ruminate on how terrible it is. They're weaving through traffic, grumbling and griping the whole time, and they get to work an hour late. Okay. Scenario B, person's on the freeway, there's an accident, and they're like, okay, well, I guess I can't change that. So they listen to their favorite podcast. They call their best friend and have a conversation. They sing along to their favorite songs on the radio, and they arrive to their destination an hour late. Now, both people are an hour late, right? So there's a relative amount of pain in the situation. But if you're looking at it from a scale of 1 to 10, in scenario A, where the person is griping and frustrated the whole time, their pain points might be like 9 out of 10. And in the second scenario, where the person accepts it and tries to make the most of it, their pain points might be like 5 out of 10. So they, with what they can control, their experience of the situation is drastically different. So don't make your pain more painful.
So don't make your pain more painful. Oh my God. Exactly. And then my mind goes that the person who was able to accept it and shift gears in the long run might actually live longer if this is the pattern of how they tackle problems that arise in their life. It's just, it's less stress, more acceptance, more rest in general, even rest that you can't feel, even unconscious rest, like your muscles being slightly less tense than they would be.
But you don't 100%. Notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that could be like a whole other conversation about resilience, but absolutely. This is one of the key aspects of resilience is adaptability. There's a level of acceptance, right? But being able to stay positive, and all of these things do lead to people, I think, living longer. I think there's studies on it, but don't quote me. I don't know the exact ones.
What do you think is like the biggest myth about productivity that make people feel as though being productive is best?
God, there's so many. Well, like we've talked about before, your productivity defines your worth. I think that's a big one. Also, this is a big one, actually, that working more makes you more productive. Not true. There's actually, there was some study done recently where they were looking at a 32-hour work week instead of a 40-hour work week. So people working, I think, like 4 8-hour days, and their job performance or their output stayed exactly the same as if they were working a whole extra day. But employees reported being happier. They showed up on time more. They were more energized and took less sick days. And so the truth is, we can get further on less work. And this is why the rest piece is essential. So for anyone who's out there, who's like how I used to be, you don't take your bathroom breaks. You're trying to power through. You don't take your lunches. You eat at your desk. These are all things I've done. You are believing a lie. You're thinking that if you do all these things, you will produce more or you'll do better at your job. But research shows that you don't. Rest is essential for productivity.
And I wonder if like when I'm thinking about that, oh God, me too. You used to not do those things. I still do those things. I'm literally going to cram Chipotle, like plant-based, like chorizo down my throat in like the next 10 minutes before my next interview, just sitting here.
I love that.
But what I'm thinking about is like, how do we get to that place that we're believing this lie? That if we do all these things and put ourself and our self-care on the back burner, that we're working more and actually producing more. And my thought was like, it's fear. Like it's this innate fear that we're not doing enough. It's like, can we survive? It's like money, our survival's tied to money. Money's tied to work. Work's tied to productivity. And so it's this like fear cycle. And it makes sense why it's so hard to get out of it.
Ooh, that is so deep. Yeah. I mean, I think many of us suffer from a scarcity mentality, which I do want to say is different than experiencing actual scarcity, which is very, very different. And you can have both at the same time. But I do think that scarcity and the fear with that leads us to think that more is better and it leads to more security. And it really, really sucks because at the end of the day, if you thought about it as overwork taking years off your life, you might see it a little bit differently. But if you associate it with security and financial strength and everything, then it's really tough. And so, yeah, we're kind of in a pickle, aren't we?
We really are. But it's conversations like these that really push the needle in the right direction and get people thinking. You know, the whole point of these episodes are like, you're a human being. Like, let's tell the truth about a certain topic. And we all, to a degree, have to be productive in some area of our lives. And the goal is to have a, not be a toxic area, wherever that area is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think truthfully, Courtney, like part of why I feel very lucky is because getting to have experiences growing up traveling and then getting to live my life in another country as a resident of another country, I've been able to see how people do it differently. And one of the things I love about where I live here in Lisbon is that luxury is defined very differently here. So when I lived in LA, luxury looked a very particular way. I mean, it was the Beverly Hills, it was the Botox, it was the restaurants you ate at, the cars you drove. And it's hard not to be impacted by all of that. And in Lisbon, luxury is like sitting on your terrace, drinking coffee and having a 4-hour lunch with friends. And for me, that just, I love that. That suits me and who I am so much more. And it's so much more soul affirming. And so, yeah, I'm very grateful that I've had the chance to see that it can work differently. And by the way, it doesn't hurt that like in many other countries, we have healthcare included. And that's a whole other story. But yeah, when you see that, I guess when you see the matrix, you're like, I do not want to be a part of this anymore. But if you're in it and you don't see any different, then how would you know?
How is the blanket European difference, I guess, from the American productivity to the European productivity? How is it still productive? How are they still advancing? Like, I feel like that's the question is like, what do you mean they're not constantly working and constantly being productive? Like, isn't that detrimental? So can you combat that?
I'll be completely honest with you. I do think that there's elements of American culture that are so amazing. I think one of the things is our creativity. And I think that in my experience, I've seen the world look to the United States as this source of creativity and forward thinking. And I love that. I'm really proud of that as an American. Most social media influencers that are the most impactful happen to be in the US. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think that it's tough because sometimes that hustle does lend itself to achieving more. I mean, like what we were talking about before we started today, like sometimes when you hustle, you see better returns in the short run. But I think in the long run, that's the question. That's where you start to see that there's a cost that you may not want to pay. So yeah, I think in Europe, I think that their priorities are just different. Here in Portugal, family is a really huge value. And you see that woven into every aspect of the culture. And I think that what I notice is that people move at a slower pace. They're less amped up, like when they have to wait for something. And you know what? Having now been impacted by that culture, I can say that for me, it's had a hugely positive impact. So just to give an example, I'm just laughing because I've changed so much. I would be the person that like, if I was in a restaurant and they didn't give me the bill soon enough, I would be like chomping at the bit, like, where's the bill? I need to get out of here because I have my 1.5-hour booked lunch. Or in the grocery store, if the line had more than 3 people, I was like, this is ridiculous. American efficiency is great until it starts to take away our humanity. And I just think that Europe leans on the side, tends to lean more toward valuing humanity in a way that I wish the United States did more of. I hope that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And it feels like it really kind of equalized the conversation because like there are benefits in the short term and there potentially are benefits based on goals that you have or the KPIs in your company, like whatever it is, you
oh
know,
my gosh.
But like, what are the KPIs of your life? You know? And I love that you said that like, it could take away humanity. And that's the point of the podcast is to bring that.
Oh
back.
My gosh. You giving me goosebumps when you ask about KPIs of your life. That is so good. I love that so much, but it's true. Right. And I think that that's a great, maybe that's even a starting point when you talk about people who are suffering from toxic productivity mindset is to take a step back and ask yourself that, what are the KPIs I want to measure my life by? This is sounding so corporate. You know, how do I measure a successful life for me? How do I measure a fulfilling life for me? And then one thing I love to talk to people about is reverse engineer that, right? So if you want your life to be joyful, if you want your life to feel full of love and family or whatever, is the path you're on now going to take you there? Because if not, like, let's redo some things. Let's change some things. And I think a lot of times we're just like on a path and we're not thinking like, where is this path taking me? And am I happy with where I'm going?
Yes, yes, exactly. And speaking of, am I happy where I'm going? I want to turn it back onto you because this conversation has been so, so helpful. And as the human being behind this message, what is next for you? What are you producing in the future? And what are your personal KPIs? Like what's going on for you personally and professionally next?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to work no more than one day a week, to be honest with you. I'm really grateful right now that I'm able to live comfortably working 2 days a week, but I'd like to create more and have more of an impact on the world and inspire more people. So I think for me, it's about how can I do that in the most powerful way? And I don't know, maybe that would be a show one day, maybe it would be through food. I don't know. I'm still figuring it out, but I would love to be able to have a bigger reach and impact. There's a quote by Emerson and I used to have this memorized, but essentially it ends with to know that people breathe easier because you lived. I feel like I haven't done enough of that in my life and I want to do more. So I want to do something where I feel like the impact of my life has made a big difference. Small task, right? No big deal. In the short run, like small, like things that are kind of right ahead of me. I'm actually really excited. I'm going to launch my YouTube channel soon.
Yay!
And talk about thanks. So I'll be talking about toxic productivity and helping people to explore what wellness looks like outside of the typical 9 to 5. So whether that's they want to be a digital nomad and travel the world, or they just like don't want to hate their life 5 days a week. So I'm hoping to get the message across that way. The other thing I'm super excited about, and I can't say too much right now, but I'll keep you posted, is that I'm doing a collaboration with a company that I really love called Bando. I don't know if you're familiar with Bando, but they produce some amazing just mental health and wellness and joy focused products. And so we're working on a little something together that will be dropping in the beginning of 2023. And I'll be doing it alongside several other of my therapist friends from online. Yeah, I'm super excited about that because I think I mean, listen, merchandise is great. Like I don't necessarily think the world needs another mug with like my name on it, but if I love products that have a purpose and can help us get somewhere. And so I think I've said enough, but anyway, I'm really excited that it's something that will, I think, increase health in people's lives with a company that I really, really love. So yeah, coming soon.
That's so exciting. That's so many things, like, but not too many things, not a toxic kind of thing. That's incredible though. I can't wait for your YouTube channel to come out and for all of the other things that you just discussed. And because we met on Instagram, and that's probably where this is primarily going to be promoted. It will also be on YouTube, but I'll be showing my face and talking about it on Instagram. Where can our listeners find you? And listeners, after she tells you, and if you enjoyed this episode, take a screenshot, tag me, tag her and help us get the message out. So where can they find you?
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so grateful for you and like the way you have created such an amazing environment for mental health and for us mental health professionals in the world. So I admire you so much. And I'm honestly, it's been such a blast chatting with you. But yeah, if people want to connect with me, I would love that. On Instagram, my handle is @exploring.therapy. And my website is exploringtherapy.com.
Love it. Love it. What do you want to leave the listeners with today as we wrap up? What's the one message when they turn this off? What's like the sentence you want them to repeat?
Your worth isn't defined by your productivity. I think it's just that your worth is not defined by your productivity, and rest is an essential part of productivity.
That's the truth. Yes, it is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Now, before you go, what is one unapologetically human thing that you do?
I love this. So I am a notorious before I go to sleep and after I wake up scrolling through my phone on social media.
Oh, it's the worst because
I don't think it's particularly healthy. I don't suggest any of my clients to do it, but it's really hard for me to put my phone down sometimes. So that is something I'm not super proud of, but I think is probably pretty relatable.
So relatable. I'm right there with you. I'm like consciously being like, I shouldn't do it, but I'm gonna do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Therese, for coming on. Please go ahead, find her on her Instagram. There's probably links to everything else. Stay tuned for what's coming out in early 2023. And as always, I am glad that you exist. Thanks for listening to this episode of Human First. Please subscribe, leave a review. It really helps with being able to keep this podcast free, and share it on your social media to help spread the message. Tag me @the.truth.doctor. As always, I'm glad that you exist. See you next week.